This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF, and coming today on the show, we'll talk with Steve Monahan, the president of the Louisiana Federation of Teachers. Common Core continues to be the major issue in education, and Governor Jindal has used his power to shut it down. What will happen with the teacher unions also having reservation about Common Core? Business groups usually aligned with the governor in favor of it, and the battle royal has just begun. Also, Dan Ireland on the success of the Louisiana International Film Festival and a big premiere in Baton Rouge tomorrow night, and we'll hear from Rabbi Barry Weinstein about events in the Middle East. And tonight, actually tomorrow night, the Metro Council expected to vote again on a fairness ordinance. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757 outside the area. Inkstershow at WRKF.org online. Just over a month ago, as the session was coming to a close, we had Steve Monahan, the president of the Louisiana Federation of Teachers, on this program. And at that time, there was much uncertainty about education, and it remains as the school year approaches. And one of the major reasons, and perhaps the reason, is that Governor Jindal is fighting Common Core and using the power of his office to do so. Today's opinion page in The Advocate says, while they may not be household names, it's becoming a very long roll call of significant players in our state who are now at odds with Governor Bobby Jindal over education policy. The governor wants to shelve the new and higher academic standards for public schools. The policymakers who pushed for the Common Core state standards are not only those who get in the headlines, such as Education Superintendent John White. A former Bessie member, Leslie Jacobs, outlined for the Educate Now group in New Orleans the dangers of withdrawing from Common Core, as the governor seeks to do so by attacking the contracts with the state's longtime test-providing company. Jacobs was among the architects of the state's long-established accountability programs in education. So we have much uncertainty, a morass of unknowns, and Steve Monahan is here to try to put this all in perspective. Now, first of all, you were not an advocate of Common Core.
Yeah, but at the same time, we were not an opponent of Common Core either. We were very troubled by the chaos that was out there, I think resultant of a failure to communicate, as they say, and from the very beginning in regard to what it was and what it wasn't. So I think where we are, Jim, now, unfortunately, is that Common Core has become common chaos in the political world. And it's creating a lot of chaos in the schoolhouses. So it is a very unfortunate situation right now.
Being a man of alliteration, I like that. Common chaos. This is like chaos in Get Smart, right?
Maybe even a little bit more bizarre than that.
And the other side was control, right? Correct. There was control and there was chaos.
Exactly. And I think, but they both work toward the same end here. I mean, the governor was all in. We all know that. Back in 09-10, the governor signed on with Superintendent Pastorek and the current president of the Bessie Board to move forward. From our perspective, and this is what I believe that where the confusion is born and where the uncertainty and in the vacuum of the lack of information, the politics enter into the discussion. The problem was is that we, as a state, embraced Common Core in 09-10, but then didn't speak much of it for the next 3 years until it was upon us. And so there was chaos, there was uncertainty, there was a political backlash that went from everywhere from this is Obamacare in another suit. I mean, we've actually heard those kinds of things, to where it was impossible to actually have a policy conversation about what was actually going on.
297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757, Inkstershow at WRKF.org. So what happens now? The governor says he's not going to do this. He's going to use his immense power to stop it. And yet the Bessie board is approaching this as though the governor doesn't have a vote. Where does that leave the teachers in the state?
It leaves the teachers in a very bad place, as usual. And I think we can put a real head on this one, because it's the problem with Common Core, I believe, is the problem with almost every policy that has ever been launched to affect education at any level. And it kind of goes like this. You sit at the 50, if you're at the 50,000 foot level, the earth is just a beautiful place, right? You want to live anywhere on it. Except as you get closer, there's some really places that you'd rather not drop into. Policymakers, or the wonks that design policies, are at the 50,000 foot level. And they're saying, look how wonderful this can be. We can all agree on these standards. And then it drops down to about 10,000 feet. And another group of policy wonks get together and say, this is great. We're going to embrace it. We're going to move forward. And then it gets to the earthly domain, right on terra firma, where we have people that have to implement it. And they're saying, what the heck do we do now? Because it doesn't make sense. And the answers there are no answers to the bountiful questions. So the further you away, mm-hmm. the less you're tuned in. So our teachers haven't been included. And our teachers now are in the squeeze again over the whole idea.
So what do you do? Do you accept the governor's edict on this, or do you follow through with John White and the Bessie board?
I think that those political titans are going to slug it out. The school's going to open.
School's going to open.
And
but
teachers are going to teach. And the
what
problem
standards,
is,
if any, will there be?
I think, Jim, that's a much deeper conversation, because that's where we get lost in the weeds, too. The assumption is that teachers are walking into the room without a sense of what they should teach, that there is a need. The most compelling need is that there has to be a standard that they don't hold. A teacher who is worth his or her salt, they're experts. They're supposed to be experts and competent in their field. They go in and they teach the children at the level that those children are ready to learn. That's what they want to do. And they have a set of standards that they know their course, and they know what teachers should know. So I don't believe that they're in a place where they won't be all running around and say, what do we teach? It will become more of a paperwork problem of how do we do this, and how do we document that we are doing it, and how do we demonstrate that we're accountable to the public when those that are over us are giving us different messages on what we should be doing.
297-5633, if you'd like to join the conversation. Steve Monahan, who heads the 21,000-member Louisiana Federation of Teachers, the state's largest teacher union, didn't like Common Core, at least parts of it, enough that you were in accord with those who were trying to put the brakes on this. Now, Heather asks a good question. Are you happy or sad about Governor Jindal's move here?
I when something becomes so toxic that the population on both sides, on all sides, are unhappy, you can't be jubilant about this. I would say that I can answer it rather directly. I don't think there was an alternative. The governor had to slow this thing down. I mean, it was, how do you implement, how does one continue to pretend that everything's fine in the buildings and everyone's on the same page and children won't be affected in regard to what their test scores are and how they progress, and say that we shouldn't stop it? Bill Gates, by the way, is in the same place practically now as he, his foundation, has called for the moratorium on high-stakes testing and implications with PARC for 2 years. We were saying that in November a year ago as an organization, calling for a three-year. Do not launch this. You weren't ready to do it. You didn't. You weren't ready to pull the trigger. For whatever reason, don't finger point. But you can't hold kids accountable for what we didn't do as adults. And I think that's the problem. That's what the governor's having to deal with. And so, it's not happiness. It's...
Were you surprised?
No. No. I think anyone who worked in the legislative session saw this coming. It was an impossible place to have a conversation, as I indicated earlier, in the committees. Folks were locking in along political lines in regard to what it meant to do either a slowdown on Common Core or a phase out or a non-participation in PARC. There was paralysis of purpose in the session. The governor was getting from his base a serious message that he needed, and we see it all over the country as governors are bolting from PARC and CORE, that it is a politicized issue. So the governor now has entered, and he has satisfied one part of a constituency that supports him. His problem, as we know, Jim, is in the business community now, that it did not satisfy business.
No, some business groups are up in arms quietly. And others are being forceful in their denunciation of the governor's move. And the governor, who doesn't often change his mind, definitely did so this time, and he did so late in the game. And the only other time this has happened, to my knowledge, was when he flipped on the pay raise for lawmakers back in 2008. So every 6 years he changes his mind. And when he does so, it's in a big way. 297-5633, Dr. Albert Samuels from Southern University, the noted political scientist, is calling in. At my suggestion, by the way, Dr. Samuels has been opining about this for some time. And what's your take on the state of affairs?
First of all, thank you, Jim, and it's good to be with you once again. Bobby Jindal was for Common Core until he was against it. And even though I think there were a lot of legitimate issues surrounding Common Core, surrounding the PARC test, are we ready to implement it? How it was being implemented? There's some legitimate issues there. But if you listen to some of the statements that the governor has made, it's hard to did not come to the conclusion that this has very little to do with some of the issues, you know, that Steve just has outlined. It has to do with the governor's own political ambitions, because Bobby Jindal was there in 2010 when this was being debated. He was one of the original persons governors signed off on these standards. He knows full well that this is not a group of standards that was articulated by the U.S. Education Department. He was part of that consortium. He was part of those discussions within the National Governors Association. So for him to now pretend that this is the Obama administration imposing standards on the states, there's a level of mendacity to this that goes beyond what even Bobby Jindal has shown himself capable of.
You have not been a supporter of his prior to Common Core, though. If was the governor in a no-win situation here, Dr. Samuels? If he had embraced Common Core, he probably would have had a lot of people criticizing him, and now he's getting a lot of criticism for rejecting Common Core.
Well, yes, he probably was in a tough position, you know, but that's the job he signed up for. You know, he's a governor, and sometimes governors have tough situations in which they have to face tough issues, you know, and they have to sometimes tell part of their base that they may be wrong. I don't feel sorry for him because that's the job he ran for.
All right. Well, I won't keep you long, but someday, maybe 5 years from now, will we look back and say that rejection of Common Core was Governor Jindal's first step toward becoming the leader of the free world? Will we be doing that?
No.
No?
No, I don't think so. Governor Jindal is about at 2% of the polls. I don't see how rejecting Common Core is going to change that. Despite many things he has done, a lot of foilings he has done to gain a lot of national attention, he's there 2% on the polls.
Well, thank you, Dr. Samuels. Always good to talk with you, and I'm sure your viewpoint is shared by more than a few people. So we will talk more. with Steve Monahan when we return, the president of the Louisiana Federation of Teachers. Is Common Core federal control of education? The governor says yes. 297-5633 if you'd like to add to the conversation. Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757, wherever you are, for Steve Monahan, president of the Louisiana Federation of Teachers. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. And Frank Barnett is producing. Today in the Advocate, Bert Robinson, a veteran attorney, says Common Core could lead to federal control of education. Those who proclaim that Common Core has only to do with educational standards and not with federal control are being misled and are untruthful, either intentionally or unintentionally, writes Mr. Robinson. He mentions that Leslie Jacob declared that in rejecting Common Core, the state could lose hundreds of millions of dollars in federal aid if the state's unable to come up with new exams that meet the federal standards. So is the federal government holding Louisiana hostage? Is it that plain? Is it that simple? Or is it more complex than that?
Well, I think it's much more complex, and we all know that. And that's the end. I think our last caller, the professor, when he called in, made the appropriate observation. This is a political battle now, and it shouldn't be. It should have been a discussion about policies, and it should have occurred a long time ago. I think if we're really honest about what's happening here in regard to the argument of federalism or the fact that the feds are running Louisiana and other states, it's essentially a states' rights argument once played out again. The genesis goes back to Reagan. When Reagan made some hay with the Carnegie Report, A Nation at Risk, and said that the United States of America needed national standards, essentially. We needed a fourth grader in Minneapolis and a fourth grader in New Orleans, all needed to know essentially the same skills. We had to be worldwide competitive. And then it was reduced to policy. And that became standards and testing for all children. But the states, in order to make the compromise politically, the states could come up with their own standards. So essentially, we moved from the 80s into now the second decade of the 21st century, and we're still having, and the argument is a states' rights argument in the United States of America. And I think the question that must be answered, Jim, somewhere down the line, and that's what makes this so complicated, is it a true statement, if we believe this, that a child in Dallas, in a school in Dallas at a particular grade, should be learning essentially the same skills that a child in Louisiana? And I think the connectivity of the world now suggests that, yes, that's true. So when we get into, well, does the federal government control public education or education, because this goes beyond public education, as we well know, it's also entering into the private sector because they're adopting these or considering these standards also. The question becomes, how much of this is a refight of something as historical as the Civil War? All over again, the states want the right to do what they need to do, except the funding is centralized to a great degree, and we're all seeking competitively the money from the federal government, from the big pot, to fund our endeavors. So it's a complicated question.
The governor has no doubt inflamed his base. If he had a base, the business people who brought him to the dance, for the most part, are not pleased about this, and some are being more vocal than others. It's hard to imagine Stephen Wagesback, who heads LABI, publicly criticizing the governor, but he is certainly at this point publicly embracing Common Core, knowing the governor does not like it. So there's a schism here that is substantial. And, of course, there's the superintendent of education, handpicked by the governor, who is standing his ground, and some believe that John White will not be able to withstand his aversion to the governor's wishes. What do you think is going to happen by the time the school year begins? Will we have a new superintendent of education?
There are some that speculate that's exactly what will happen. And there are also those, I mean, we're entering the world of science fiction here almost, that speculate that it's not as complicated as everyone thinks. I mean, I'm sure you've heard the theories that this is all a stage play that's going on right now. And friends have worked it out in regard to how this will play out. I haven't subscribed to the latter. I think that there is going to be an individual or individuals that are going to pay the price. And the highest paid educator in the state, of course, is the superintendent of education. Now, there is a tenuous, I would say at best, majority of support right now for the superintendent. But we all know the sands of the political sands shift, and they shift quickly. I think in today's paper, Jim, also was the call by three BSEE board members for a special meeting. And that added the governor's appointee and Lottie Beebe mm-hmm. and Carolyn Hill. Now, there's a resistance for that, but what the ask is a really reasonable one. If we are not going to do what we're said to be doing, and the governor has made it clear with the investigation he wants of the contracts and whether or not these things were let properly are all issues that may end up in court also, then we ought to have Plan B. And everyone at least ought to know what page we're on. Are we going to use LEAP and iLEAP again? Are we going to suspend look, to me, kids are being held hostage. Comparisons are going to be made to Louisiana children, inevitably to other states that are also in chaos, and many of them right now, for the similar reasons. So I think the best thing is to slow it down. And if it means a freeze on publicizing the state of our children's test scores for a year, then so be it. But I don't believe it's going to be resolved quickly.
297-5633. We'll go back to the phone lines in just a moment. Steve Monahan, president of the Louisiana Federation of Teachers, he cited the story by Wilson Tell, and the story reads, "The simmering debate over Common Core reignited Tuesday with three members of the Louisiana top school board asking for a special meeting of the panel to come up with new tests after Governor Jindal scrapped the first ones." And it goes on to say, State Superintendent John White dismissed proposals by the trio. So John White is moving on as though it's business as usual. And there's one thing to be against something. Your boss, essentially the governor is his boss. Let's face it, even though six members of the BSEE board have to vote to fire him if it happens. But it's one thing to be against your boss, but it's another to just constantly be driving it home, and he's not budging right now.
Yeah, it's unprecedented in many, many ways. You're right. It's a cabinet-level position. And this last session, we haven't had a lot of discussion on it publicly, but I haven't seen in the last perhaps five sessions so much noise around reinventing BSEE, electing the superintendent. I mean, those were actually highly debated issues in the legislature. Didn't have the votes, but I can assure you this, Jim, as we watch politics, all of this is going to come home to roost in the next election cycle.
Wade at Louise. Wade, good morning. You're on with Steve Monahan.
Thank you. I appreciate the privilege of asking you guys some questions, making a statement. I just find the whole thing so disheartening and discouraging to have our education a chance at a good curriculum and standards to be politicized and made a political football and like it has been done. I mean, really, you know, Louisiana is one of the most illiterate, undereducated, underfunded in education states in the country. And here we are, we have a governor who's decided to make it his political football to pick up votes in New Hampshire or someplace, and it's just terrible. It's so disheartening where we have a shot at something that may actually improve things to have it just torn asunder. And that's just what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Steve?
I think the caller's correct. It's tragic. That's what makes it very difficult. There is no, for one, to answer the question, are you happy or sad? The whole situation has been sad from the get-go. And I do believe there is a finger to be pointed at those that had the responsibility to implement, to do so in an honest fashion and answer questions to the public forthright. I mean, there were questions asked about who was involved in the design of the standards. There were questions asked, were the standards developmentally appropriate? The problem that if you were a fair-minded person and listening to the extremes on each side of the issue, you had to be troubled because the answers weren't clear. We never ever received the clear answers to the questions that were being lodged. Now it comes out like this: no one wins, because now there has been, as far as the politics of it, folks have locked in to the position. You have those that believe in that this is the best thing, or Common Core was the best thing since sliced bread, that are going to say, why are you against standards, if you ask a question? You have the folks on the other side who are proposing that this is all about Obama. There is no room, there is no air left in a room for a discussion in regard to such things as, is Louisiana ready to launch online testing in every one of its public schools so that we can have fair comparisons, that a child, say, in St. James Parish, who receives an Air Mac in ninth grade, is going to have is not going to have an advantage to a child perhaps in Caldwell Parish, where there may be six kids for every computer in the school. So the very nuts and bolts of this thing on whether we were ready to implement it at the time that they launched, those questions got lost in the sea of politics here, and that's indeed tragic.
297-5633 is your number, and a listener, Micah, asks about your statement earlier that you were not surprised. The governor's management style is one that has been weighed pro and con for some time. Why do you think it was predictable that he would act in this way?
Well, because the governor had the governor's office had placed cards, or we call cards, the green and red cards, and when committees are meeting, green being in support of a bill and red being against the bill, his office had placed cards in support of bills that were objecting to the movement forward of Common Core in one way or the other. So the governor had shown early hand, not the weight. Full weight of his office during that legislative session, and he had hinted all along that he was considering acting after the session. Now, the tragedy of that is, if we would have had, and this goes to the point of leadership, if we would have had leadership from the get go, we would have had honest conversations that would involve the governor's office at the beginning of an 85-day session, and perhaps some of these things would have been resolved. High drama came out as a result of waiting until the legislature went home, and then the suspicion of many is that the governor then took the opportunity to seize the political limelight on this. So it is a splitter, though, and I think going back to the professor, it is going to make, in his base, it's going to be energized on one side, but the more moderate portion of his base are going to be very upset because they think it is a rollback on commitment to standards.
Well, it may be such that the governor has run his last race in Louisiana. He's only 43, and there's much time to run again, but the only race that he probably will run for from between now and the end of his career is the presidency, and he may do that a few times, but if he ever runs again in Louisiana, he's inflamed the very people who put him in office. So I think he would have some challenges. By the way, we have invited Superintendent of Education John White on this show, and he has declines through his press person, citing potential litigation, and it looks like the courtroom, you called it common chaos. Well, Common Core may ultimately go to the courts. This is going to be a dispute that has many tentacles.
Yeah, and doesn't that sound like deja vu? And that's the problem when policies that are not implemented smartly, that are done in small groups and clusters of folk. I mean, that's the same thing that happened to Acts 1 and 2. the same for the same reasons, fundamentally. If folks were not included in the conversations and actions were rushed through. So, yeah, it'll unfortunately end up, I'm sure, at some point in litigation. It'll also, we all change places. You brought the point up. Does the superintendent survive the summer? That's a question. The politics, sooner or later, politics comes to what it is. It's going to be compromise that moves out of the box they're in. And compromise in this case means that there has to be a change of faces at some point. The mm-hmm. governor's term will be completed. We know that. He is not going to resign his office over this, so therefore others are going to be held accountable.
Another listener says this would be akin, Benjamin says it'd be akin to George W. Bush calling off the bombing of Iraq as the planes were hovering over Baghdad. And it's pretty close to that.
That's quite a metaphor.
297-5633 if you'd like to talk with Steve Monahan, the always loquacious head of the Louisiana Federation of Teachers. And as far as standards, do we need standards? Obviously, we have some challenges in our public school system.
We certainly do need standards. And no one who from my side of the aisle has said, oh, we're against standards. The problem you have is once you enter a conversation and you say, look, I'm for high standards, however, then you get framed as being against standards. We need them. Teachers are going to uphold them. There's not going to be a point where what do we do next, as we said earlier in the show. However, there's no clear understanding right now of what these standards are. I hear people say it's a curriculum. It's the test. And there's no way, I think, to take what is the common chaos of the moment and make order out of it. So that puts Governor Jindal in a superior position now, because he is actually saying what should have said a long time ago.
All right. Charles, good morning. Where are you calling from?
I'm right here in North Baton Rouge, Jim.
Okay, sounds like Charles on North Foster. Okay.
Well, you can call me that too, Jim. That's fine too. But my community is bigger than one street, but North Foster, North Baton Rouge, take your pick.
That's where Woody Jenkins lives. He must be a neighbor of yours.
Well, I think of Woody as a neighbor, somewhat distant, but still a neighbor.
Well, and it's good to be neighborly.
I like Woody. It's just his politics we disagree on. I'm concerned because, like always, the voice, there's no voice that I recognize on behalf of the students. And I've lived in New England. I know how they value education. Now, they may not value the federal government or anyone trying to take power away, but they value education. But I don't hear anyone out there voicing support from the student perspective. And ladies and gentlemen, the United States of America is falling behind the rest of the world. Even our elite students from private schools are falling behind. But no one's articulating this. I'll hang up and listen to your guests.
Steve.
Well, look, there's a number of basic truths that Charles mentions. Is there a difference in regard to the commitment to public education or into education in general, regionally? I think the answer is yes, there's obviously a difference. And there are very, very complicated reasons, I think, for that also. The bountiful harvest of high-paying jobs that we once believed there were for kids, whether they were educated or not. The rest of the statement in regard to where we stand in reference to the rest of the world, I think it depends upon the test that we're looking at. It's not as simple as a truth as it is needing more examination.
We'll spend a few more minutes with Steve Monahan and have some other information as well. Much happening in our community, believe it or not, beyond Common Core. Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number for Steve Monahan and our remaining time with him. John in St. George. John, good morning. You're on WRKF. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Doing well.
This whole debacle reminds me very much of the early 60s when George Wallace stood in the doorway at the University of Alabama. The governor might as well be doing the same thing. I taught for 30 years at the University of at LSU, and students can reach higher standards, and did while I was there and are still doing so. High standards are not created by the federal government. They're created by a consortium of people that are concerned about the higher standards.
Steve?
Well, I wouldn't have, I remember the image that the caller, you know, evoked here of George Wallace standing in the schoolhouse, in front of the schoolhouse door, and it brought back a flood of memories, actually. And I do think that's at the heart of the issue right now. The country itself, the United States of America, is at war in many ways, from state to state. And I think that's affecting the policy discussions. And going back to the essence of all of this, we haven't had a discussion on whether or not this is a problem that is a result of a botched implementation from the get-go, which reframed the arguments to make the Common Core itself unsalvageable. Or is there really problems with the standards? I think it's all related. I think the problem is that Americans in general, and teachers for sure, are tired of the overtesting of students, the quantification of everything, and everyone wants to teach the child and not the standardized test. So that enters into the backlash here also.
Hugh at LSU. Hi, Hugh. You're on with Steve Monahan.
Thanks, Jim. How are you doing? Listen, Steve, let me ask you one question. I'm going to try to be careful on how I do it, but I have a feeling the genuine Republicans are worried that there's not enough room for Jesus Christ in the Common Core.
All right. Is that part of this?
Well, it's that's the problem with Babel, you know, and that's what the session was about. It was about that and everything, and that's unfortunate because when the conversation's about everything, and the arguments about everything, whether or not this is the overreach of Barack Obama, or whether or not it's an attempt to put God out of our classroom, then what ends up happening is it's a conversation about nothing. So we didn't have the conversations about whether or not Louisiana was up and ready to run the standards, whether or not the standards were appropriate for age level. Those conversations got lost. And Jim, I'm going to tell you my frustration. You mentioned I'm loquacious. I wasn't during this debate, because I found there was not a lot of place to have a conversation about what was it, what was a non-politicized
right.
issue. And that's unfortunate.
Well, kids are the most resilient people in the world, and teachers aren't far behind. So you say, despite all this common chaos, as you call it, and I think that this will probably catch on, common chaos, that the show will go on.
The show will continue as long as the sun comes up.
Okay. Thank you, Steve Monahan.
Thank you.
For joining us halfway on vacation.
Yeah, that's correct.
And we're joined for a few moments by Dan Ireland, who was involved intricately in the Louisiana International Film Festival a few weeks ago. And first of all, I understand, based on word of mouth, that it was a roaring success, Dan.
It was beyond our wildest dreams, Jim, which was, the most you can hope for any festival is that kind of participation from the community. And it was, we were hoping it would be better than the first year, but it really exceeded our expectations.
And Chelsea Himesfield has done a great job bringing great talent to our community, and that continues beyond the Louisiana International Film Festival. You and Chesley and some others will be involved in a Louisiana premiere tomorrow night at Perkins Row. What will happen Thursday night?
Thursday night, we are having, in our series of the Louisiana Film Society screenings, we're showing Begin Again, the new film by John Carney. Did you ever get a chance to see his first film Once?
I have not. Of course, I've heard about it.
Yeah, and now it's a Broadway musical.
Mm-hmm.
This wonderful little Irish film that came out of, you know, nowhere in 2006 and, you know, and it fortunately got the right breaks. And, you know, some of the right breaks are, you know, getting seen in film festivals. And it did, and it got picked up. And now the director has a career, and he's made a beautiful new film with Keira Knightley and Mark Ruffalo. And it's probably one of the most romantic comedies, one of the nicest romantic comedies that I've seen all year.
And it is the Louisiana premiere, certainly a cast that is formidable.
Oh, they're not only formidable, it's their best work. It's really a wonderful film. And what we're doing is we're having these screenings, you know, throughout the year. And all you have to do is become a member of the Louisiana International Film Festival to come on into it. I mean, it's admission is free. And you know, we're doing it this month, we're doing it next month, and the month after that. So, you know, any support we can get from the Baton
Rouge. All right, so it's free if you are a member, and it's tomorrow night, 7:30 at Cinemark Perkins Row. How do you become a member?
By joining on our website, lifilmfest.org, and just signing up. And you know what? In supporting the festival by coming out to events. And, you know, we're really trying to get everyone involved in this. We're trying to make this a year-round thing where we can develop filmmakers and take this to a whole new level.
Well, the festival this year brought in attendees from Texas, Arkansas, Mississippi, California, New York, many other places. And Dan, your background is in Washington State.
Yeah. I started the Seattle Film Festival back in 1976, and when I was much younger. And and I was there for 12 years. And I still go back every year. I was just up at the festival again. It's the longest running festival in America. It goes for a month. So we're hoping to grow in that kind of vein, you know, down in Baton Rouge, which would be a dream.
All right. Well, tomorrow night, 7:30, for those who are members of this group, and you can join, of course, admission free of charge for the Louisiana premiere of Begin Again. Keira Knightley, she is regarded, and whenever they rank the most beautiful women in the world, she's always on the list.
Yeah, she sure is, isn't she? And, you know, she's so, she's growing so beautifully as an actress, which is nice. It's got, she has a feeling of a classic beauty like Audrey Hepburn. I mean, she's got that kind of presence. And in this movie, it is her Audrey Hepburn moment. She's got that same kind of feeling that Audrey Hepburn had back in Funny Face. And it's hard to compare actors, but she's really lovely. I think, you know, she's one of the best young actors that we have out there.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dan. Good luck tomorrow night and beyond. And I guess
thank
it goes
you,
without
Jim.
Saying there will be a Louisiana International Film Festival for 2015.
Oh, you bet.
All right. Okay.
Thank you so much,
thank
Jim.
You. Congratulations to you and Chesley and others who are responsible for bringing some great art to our community. And in studio is Rabbi Barry Weinstein, who came to this community about, 32 years ago now?
Exactly.
1982 was the rabbi in charge at B'nai Israel for many years, and now is in charge at synagogues in Lafayette, Lake Charles, and Rabbi Emeritus with B'nai Israel. And you're joining us on a sad occasion. Last week you lost your brother. One of the most remarkable interviews I ever did was with your brother on top of the David Citadel Hotel, live on WRKF, by the way. And a helicopter was hovering above, and your brother, knowing that this is a volatile part of the world, he pulled a gun.
He always carried heat. He had heat, and he was a top marksman. May he rest in peace.
And he moved there and stayed there and loved Israel. He lived in one of the settlements, didn't he?
Absolutely. Kfar Adamim, a beautiful yeshuv, or settlement as it's known, about 35 minutes south of Jerusalem, 5 minutes from Jericho, a beautiful mountaintop settlement. And as I said to Shoshana, Susan, his now widow, as I was leaving just a few days ago, it's as though I feel as though I have two homes, Jim. One right there, and one here, of course, in Baton Rouge.
He was Eliyahu, was a big part of your life.
Absolutely. He, Eddie, or Eliyahu, he gave me my first trip to Israel when I was studying in a junior year abroad program in Madrid, Spain, for Hanukkah of 1962. And little did I know, at least, it was probably in his mind that giving me that trip for Hanukkah in 62 might help pave the way for him and, in his mind, his dream for our whole family to be in Israel.
He was, as many are in that area and, of course, across the world, concerned about that being the hot spot of the world and neighbors that are not friendly to Israel being in close proximity. I hate it when I drag you into politics, but on many, many issues, you would be in accord, I'm sure, with our current president, but on foreign policy, probably not. And I see in the latest New York Times poll, which was released yesterday, Americans now are giving President Obama 40% approval and 54% disapproval. And when it comes to his policy on Iraq, when the question is asked, has the president clearly explained what the U.S. goals are in Iraq? Only 23% say that the goals have been clearly explained. Do we have an issue right now in our foreign policy, in your judgment?
Well, I think the poll is very indicative of many of our citizens' concerns about this administration's foreign policy. I would just want to say that I hope we all remember that Israel is a bastion of democracy. Walking and living through Israel and in Jerusalem, one sees people of every background. When I was with my brother in Shaare Tzedek Hospital for the full week before he passed, Americans, foreigners, Arabs, Muslims, together with Israelis being treated and helped and healed. Any talk of apartheid in Israel to me is ridiculous. And Israel simply wants peace continually. And even going through the territory, or as it's known here, the occupation, one sees Israelis and Arabs living, working together continually. And that's the dream, I think, that we all have for Israel.
I don't think there's any doubt your brother was willing to give his life for this cause. And many people who live in Israel, they know they're in a sensitive area of the world. They know that the world could end any day. It's probably like Americans felt in the 1950s when they were building bomb shelters. But did that have any, does it cause stress, perhaps curtail lifespan for people who have to live under that kind of concern every day?
They take it for granted that they have to protect themselves and they have to be wary and always concerned. But there are fewer checkpoints now, for example, in the territories than there ever have been. And there's a tremendous amount of optimism on the part of a large part of the population that one day peace will come. And Susan was kind enough to let me pick out several books from my brother's library. I brought this just to have it on the desk here, which is called Right to Exist, Israel's Right to Exist. And my brother and I and so many of us feel that, you know, once the world, the Arab community especially, would recognize Israel's right to exist as a free, independent, sovereign Jewish state, there would be such a flourishing of peace. And you were there and you traveled through Israel.
Yeah, it's been a few years, but when I went to a restaurant, in many restaurants, not just one, in Jerusalem, the first question generally asked is, sir, do you have a gun? And that's generally not a question you get when you go to Louis or DiGiulio's or Thai Kitchen or some fine eatery here in Baton Sullivan's. You know, they celebrate pugilism, but they don't ask if you're carrying heat.
Mentioning restaurants, on a trip 2 years ago that I took people from the temples in Lafayette and Lake Charles, on Friday night before we came home for Shabbos dinner, I thought we'd be in a typical Israeli Jewish restaurant. We went to Old Man in the Sea, I think it's called, a really famous Arab restaurant on a Friday night, Shabbat evening, filled, of course, with Americans, Arabs. All the waiters were, of course, Arab. We had a tremendous evening, and I wasn't asked if I had a gun.
Okay. Councilwoman Denise Marcel, to change the subject, plans tonight, it is tonight, at the council meeting to introduce a fairness ordinance. The ordinance would provide protection from discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in employment, housing, and public accommodations. Similar ordinance passed in Shreveport last year, but in Baton Rouge so far, despite your efforts and those of others, Rabbi Weinstein, Chris Andrews, and Joe Tregel have been the big three. Now Dale Brown has joined you. It's been unsuccessful. Is this going to be any different?
I just got back in town a few days ago, so I'm not currently up to speed on where the council members stand. I would love for the an ordinance, right, this time?
Yes.
For it to be passed. Ours, One Baton Rouge, was simply a resolution.
Yeah, this one has actually more authority, and Denise Marcel, an African-American councilwoman, is pushing it, and we shall see where it goes.
Let us hope it will pass. Thank you for having me
on. I saw Joe Tregel trying to get Buddy Amoroso's vote at Monday's press club meeting. We'll see how Buddy votes on this, and we'll talk about it tomorrow and the days to come, I'm sure. Thank you, Rabbi, and sorry for your loss.
Thank you so much.
We shall return tomorrow. Until then, for Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.